Just in time.
Kingway, Fox, Spear, Locke's acting very weird. Captain Pike, Sisko's wife, Klingons and the afterlife. Boimler, Tendy's dog, Ransom is very harsh. Spore Drive, Black Alert, Giorgio has gone berserk. Teacher, bad left, Edward is an idiot. Spock is dead, Worf is wed, Chekhov's wearing red. Data's cat, Kim Peck's at, Q has had enough of that. Beam me up, make it so, everybody let's go.
We talk about the series. You can join us live by picking up your phone now. We talk about the series. We're coming to you on your streaming services now. We talk about the series.
Good evening, Trekkies. It's Thursday night. It's September 29th, and you know what that means? That means we're live. That means you can let your fingers do the walking and call Trek Talking at 646-668-2433. I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim. Welcome to the podcast. I want to introduce to you my awesome Trek experts. We'll start off with Eric. Eric is out in Portland. How are you doing tonight, Eric?
Well, I'm doing okay, Jim. We're having a nice little rainy evening slash day here, and that intro was quite something. I feel kind of excited and kind of confused by it. It's going to be a good show, man.
they always are, aren't they?
A little bit. I like that.
Our very own David, the donut guy, and he did bring a couple of donuts with him this time, and he's also from Portland. How are you doing, David?
Nom, 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 nom. I'm doing pretty good. As Eric mentioned, it's what's that?
What kind of donuts?
So Portland has a very interesting brand of donut called Blue Star, and I ended up getting a raspberry rosemary donut along with a tropical delight.
Sounds delicious. If I had a transporter, yeah. I'd be right over there. we have Dunkin' Donuts, but we have Jones's Donuts, which is a local donut shop. Pretty good donuts, though. I got it. And also, we have with us our very own Charles, and Charles is out in Las Vegas. How you doing, Charles?
I'm doing good. Feels nice to have autumn in the morning, but I'm tired of summer in the afternoon. So Eric did finally share some of his rain yesterday morning, though maybe a few less lightning strikes and a little less flooding. But readjusted my earbuds, and now I can hear again.
Well, we could be in Florida with Mark Lee, you know.
Mark Lee's doing fair. He wasn't in the center of it.
No, he wasn't. Nope. So, guys, like I said, we are live, so you can give us a call, 646-668-2433, and that's one of the things that makes this podcast different from a lot of others in that you can participate. And there's many ways you can participate. One way is by letting your fingers do the walking and calling Trek Talking at 646-668-2433. And the other way is on our Facebook page. Absolutely. You can go there, Trek Talking and Beyond, spell out A-N-D, and you can participate with us there. So lots and lots of ways that you can participate. We're pretty excited tonight because we have 118,360 downloads of our podcast. If you're listening live, that's great. But if you're not, you can find us at podpage.com/trek-talking. You'll find all 487. That's right. 480. Well, actually, only 486 because this is 487. And this one's not there yet until after we get done. So there's only 486 there right now. And you can go all the way back to the early, early days when it was just me and Admiral Ken. So please go and check that out. And over on our Facebook page, we have 114,264 followers, which is really awesome. So thank you to each and every one of you guys. Now, I hope you guys either listened live or downloaded later our podcast on Monday night of the Toy Chest. We talked to John Stetzler, who is the Vice President of Marketing for Playmates Toys. And we had a really great podcast. It was a lot of fun. We learned a lot of stuff. And I wanted to give a shout out of congratulations to Mike Koopmans and Desiree Terrebonne. Well, they both called in on Monday night and talked to John, had some questions. And Mike picked up a Riker character. And Desiree picked up Data, which is really cool. I also had a Picard, and I told you guys that if you couldn't listen live or call in live, that's fine because you could IM me later. And Suzanne P. IM'd the page later, and she picked up Captain Picard. So congratulations to everybody, and I want you all to remember that Star Trek fans are the best fans, and that is true. We've got a lot of birthdays to dive into tonight. But before we get to our birthdays or before we get to our fan shout-outs or, you know, anything like that, there are a couple of things that I can't find on my page. Where did it go? Where did it go? I had everything lined
left
up.
Left at the bottom.
So, yeah, so I just a couple of things I want to talk about right now before we get into anything. And I want to say happy 35th birthday to Star Trek The Next Generation, 35 years ago yesterday it premiered. And I want to play for you guys the original television promo from 1987 that was all over the TV promoting Star Trek The Next Generation. And here it is.
Tonight, the 24th century begins.
Welcome to the Enterprise.
In a special world premiere movie, Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Ready for departure, sir.
Engage.
78 years have passed since the days of the original USS Enterprise. Now a new galaxy starship has been designed with a new team of highly skilled Federation explorers. Starfleet Captain Jean-Luc Picard, Commander Riker, Executive Officer, Chief Medical Officer Crusher, and her brilliant son, Wesley. Lieutenant Commander Data, an android. The telepathic Troy. Geordi, a man with unique vision. Security Officer Yar, and Klingon Officer Worf.
Shields and deflectors up, sir.
Go to yellow alert.
Their first mission, investigate a new star base on planet Denim 4.
Thou art directed to return to thine own solar system immediately.
A hostile alien threatens the crew.
Now go back, or thou shalt most certainly die.
But they're determined to finish their mission.
Arm half photon torpedoes. Place them on ready status.
Hostile is now beginning to overtake us, sir.
Together, they stand trial before a merciless court.
You will now answer to the charge of being a grievously savage race.
Now, they have 24 hours to uncover the secrets of a strange world.
They're firing on far points, sir.
The classic legend begins an all-new adventure.
Let's see what's out there.
Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Now, I was there for that premiere. We had a big Star Trek party at my apartment. We all crammed into my little living room and had a pizza and watched it. I recorded it on VHS so that we could go back and watch it frame by frame and dissect it. So the one thing that really excited us about that was the Enterprise separated. We went crazy when the Enterprise separated the saucer section from the star drive. And wow, I just can't say. I loved it then, and I just had never seen anything like that. And to me, it was like Star Trek is back. It's bigger, it's better, it's bolder. I loved it right away. And of course, Klingon Officer Worf got me right from the start. So, yeah. So, Eric, do you remember the first time you saw Encounter at Farpoint?
Oh, yeah, I sure do. I was in high school, and I remember that I had to gather up my family, and I was like, you guys are going to sit, and you're going to watch this with me, and you're going to like it. It was a big family event. I was so excited about it, and I got the whole family gathered around the TV, and we watched it, and I did the same thing. I remember I was laying on the floor on my stomach, and when the Enterprise separated, I literally stood up and went, what is happening? Just completely freaked out. So, yeah, I remember it like it was yesterday. We didn't even have a VHS player at the time, so I couldn't record it. But I remember, you couldn't just go online and buy things, but I remember starting to try and figure out how to track down that VHS. And within about a year or so, or whenever they had it, I had that VHS, even though I had no way to play it. It would be like 5 or 6 years before I would actually get a VHS player, but I had to have it.
Yeah, I that was really exciting when TNG hit. And how about you, Charles? What do you remember about the first time you saw Encounter at Farpoint?
I'm almost positive it might have been in my mom's bedroom, the two of us sitting in her TV or in her bed, sitting there watching on TV and just in awe that's like, oh, we're seeing live Star Trek on TV for me the first time, because I had just seen reruns and movies. To finally see a new series and to be excited about, we finally got Star Trek on TV again. We were pumped and excited about it.
I know one of the things that I remember most about it was, besides the ships separating, was the fact that in the opening sequence, we see the USS Hood flying next to the Enterprise when they go to pick up Riker. And on TOS, we never really saw any other ships. Well, there was the one, we did see four Constitution-class ships in the Ultimate Computer. But we never really got to see other Federation ships besides the Enterprise. And here we are, Encounter at Farpoint. We see the USS Hood, Excelsior-class starship from Star Trek III, flying next to the Enterprise. And I was like, wow. Not only does the ship separate, but Starfleet has other ships. And that just, I was like, wow, this is going to be good. And how about you, David?
You know,
what do you remember about the first time that you saw Encounter at Farpoint 35 years ago?
Well, I do have to say I do feel a little old. I was actually at my grandparents' house. I didn't actually saw it when it first came out, but because I didn't really know about Star Trek back then. But I remember seeing one of the Star Trek TNG episodes, but it happened to be counted Farpoint, so I don't know. It was, I like I said, I wasn't really much of a Star Trek fan back in the day, but I kind of became one in my early years. So, yeah.
Later on, that's cool. And actually, we have a caller on the line here, guys. If I can get this thing to connect, there we go. Hey, good evening. Thank you for calling Trek Talk. And what's your name and where are you calling us from tonight?
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, this is Brother Ray. How you doing?
Hey Ray, what's happening, buddy?
I just walked in the door. I thank God I called you guys just in time to walk in the door.
Hey, that's cool. Hey, what do you think, Judge? Is Judge gonna break the home run record?
I don't know, but that's what I'm thinking about all day, because they run that all day today. I hope so. Because you don't know what, it's been a long time since what the last time, I think the last one was Barry Bonds, wasn't it, last time they did that? I forgot.
Yeah, it's been a while.
But anyway, like you got talking about, I walked into an account, I forgot, yeah, I remember it was 35 years ago, or yesterday, kind of Farpoint, you know, and that's what I'm talking about in the DJ. You know what? I bumped into it when, remember when Star Trek told the voice call of VHS and they showed the preview of it? That's the answer. I don't know. Let me check this out. So what? Yeah. So, you know, so the next moment, you know, when they first came out, it's different because, you know, without Kirk and Spock and McCoy, and the one thing I like apart was, got me open, was they brought McCoy, like, you remember the part where McCoy and Data was walking through the ship with his old behind himself?
That was good.
But 137 years old, and he's still walking, 137 years old, man, still walking like that. Whoa, that's deep.
I remember that one.
Man, I remember that well. Well, like I said, guys, and one more thing, my anniversary this week, I didn't call last week, I was busy last week. Well, it was September 29th, was two episodes of my favorite. Star Trek, Naked Time, that's when everybody got ripped. Remember that part where Kirk, you're talking about, you know, the planet was destroying itself, and he smacked Spock, and Spock smacked him hard.
Yup. Yep.
That's some good stuff.
He's smacking him hard and all that stuff, and he turned around to everybody. Fall. I said, where are the seatbelts? What kind of preacher did with no seatbelts?
That's true.
Well,
I always thought if they don't have seatbelts, why aren't the chairs magnetized so that they don't fly around?
You know what? I've been saying that for years. I know the show's out, right? It could be like one little simple thing, you know, the first 5 minutes, right? Now, we're talking like 40, 45 minutes later, they saw the problem within the hour. I turn around like, okay, I can see that going on. Oh, yeah, but you told me before I go, you told me my mic, okay, I was watching the other night, was it Star Trek The Darkness? Remember that part at the end when the ship was getting ready to crash and Sue talking about, yo, we ain't going nowhere? And here he goes, and they got the Megaton things on the seats? I'm like, where did this happen?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they did have seatbelts on the Enterprise and the Kelvin.
Yeah, I can remember though it was the '60s, the CSI wasn't really out yet. Like that. So you know. So anyway, I mean, back to the Dew Ranch. So listen, you guys, you know what I'm saying? You guys take care. I see you guys. I call you guys next week. I gotta walk my dog right now. I just walked from work. I walk my dog. So I'll call you guys next week. Enjoy your weekend, right? Because right now it's getting kind of cold out here right now.
Yeah, what's the temperature down in the Bronx?
What about now? Hold on, give me 1 second here. I gotta go my weather thing. No, I'm using two phones. Give me 1 second. Right about now, it's 60 degrees out here right now.
60? Cool.
Yeah, it's 60 degrees, but you know, it's got a little bit of wind, you know, for the trees, little bit of wind. You know,
right.
Ever since the other night we had that big behind rainstorm, was it Monday night we had that big behind rainstorm. After that, everything could cool down a bit.
Not too cold for October baseball, though.
I'm really nervous about what's going on for the World Series. I'm really nervous about this. So let's just cross our fingers and see what happens.
That's all we can do.
I'm trying to call my mother-in-law, and she's not answering her freaking phone right now.
Oh, she's probably watching
anyway,
the game. Breaks the record.
Right.
Well, Ray, you go on.
All right, guys, take care.
Thank you for calling, and you try to stay safe down there in the Bronx, buddy.
I will. You too, guys. I'll call you guys next week.
Have a good night. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
All right, guys. So that's Encounter at Farpoint, but guess what? Because we're not done. We are not done because we have another birthday to talk about tonight. But this one's a slightly newer one than that. This one's not quite 35 years ago. This one is 5 years ago. And it was 5 years ago yesterday that Star Trek Discovery premiered. And Star Trek Discovery, if you guys don't recall, the Vulcan Hello premiered on CBS broadcast television. And then the second part, the Battle of the Binary Stars, was exclusively on CBS All Access. I don't know why they didn't play both back-to-back on broadcast television, but they didn't. It was only the first episode, and then the second one you had to watch on CBS All Access. But they were both on at the same night.
Make you want to go get CBS All Access to see what happened.
That's right. Now, unless you had it, you got to watch them both. So,
yep.
5 years ago today, this promo was popping up all over the place.
Captain, where are we going? We have no map, and you can't set a course without a star. It's hard to imagine. You've served under me for 7 years.
Commander Burnham.
I think it is time we talked about you having your own command.
Two to transport.
Great unifiers are few and far between, but they do come. Often such leaders will need a profound cause for their followers to rally around.
What am I looking at?
Object of unknown origin.
We've come all this way, Captain. It would be irresponsible to leave whatever that is unknown.
What have you done out there on the edge of Federation space?
Computer. Enable igniter.
Captain, warp signatures detected.
Contact Starfleet Command. We have engaged the Klingons.
You will never learn, Vulcan. Your tongue is too human.
I'm trying to save you. I'm trying to save all of you. We target its neck, cut off its head. Starfleet doesn't fire first.
We have to.
My people were biologically determined for one purpose alone, to sense the coming of death. I sense it coming now.
Now, I remember, all of us must remember that. We had a premiere party over at Freakopolis Geekery where, and we all got together and had a big screen TV there, and we had pizza and everything else, and we all sat there and we watched the premiere of Star Trek Discovery. And I got to tell you, just like I was with The Next Generation, I was completely blown away by what I saw. What I saw was a movie of the week on television. The cinematographics, the sound, everything about it was like completely on par with what we were seeing from J.J. Abrams on the movie screens. And that just, I was just blown away with the detail. And I also have to say, I enjoyed the Klingons. To see 24 houses, to see different Klingons, I liked that. And I liked Laurel right from the start. She's still my favorite. And I liked seeing different Klingons. And they all had slightly different, what's the word I'm looking for? Well, the one Klingon wore like a gold headpiece. The House of...
Yeah, just their look was different. Yeah, they were uniquely adorned.
Yes, that's the word, adorned. And I liked it right from the get-go. So I was pulled in, and I was a fan right away. And I also liked, I don't know if you guys remember this or not, but they spoke in Klingon, and they had Klingon subtitles, mm-hmm. like actual Klingon subtitles, not English in Klingon, but Klingon. So you could actually read the Klingon language if you wanted to have the Klingon subtitles. And I don't ever remember any other Star Trek having Klingon subtitles as an option. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, I mean, the coolest thing about that, Jim, was that it, like, when they first start showing the Klingon subtitles, you're like, what is happening? They're giving me subtitles that I can't read and I can't understand. And so it immediately puts you into the headspace of being the foreign entity in that environment, right? I loved that. I loved that they brought you into this space where you don't know what's going on because you can't read and you can't hear. And so you just got to kind of play it out and see what happens. That was so cool.
Yeah. I was pulled in right from the get-go. So here I am today, still talking about Discovery 5 years later, patiently waiting for season 5.
Yeah,
how about you, David?
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, hi. Sorry. I was in the middle of eating.
you were eating a donut.
I really do like the way the Klingons look now that I later on. I mean, when I first saw them, I was like, okay, they're a little different, but yeah. But now that more I think I thought about it over the years, I was thinking, because I think they actually mentioned that they were part of some sort of like sect. Like a group of Klingons. And so I was thinking, you know, later on in the season, they actually did start to show regular what TNG Klingon version would look like. And that's the one I grew up and got used to. And yeah, I know that there's a whole Kirk version of Klingons and everything, but then they kind of like retro that whole idea into the Enterprise, how they came. And so I don't know. I just got used to the whole head rigid from the TNG version. But, yeah, so over the years, I actually noticed that, yeah, you know, they could look somewhat different. I mean, not all humans look the same, so, you know, why not? So, you know, the idea that the a particular set of group of people, or Klingons in this case, were together and they just started forming their own, I guess in the case of the house, you know, that they, even though they're all different houses within that same ship, but, you know, it's just the idea that they looked slightly different kind of, it just had to grow on me over the years, but, you know, now I'm kind of getting it, and, yeah, it's pretty fun.
Yeah. And then how about you? What do you remember about the first time you saw Discovery, Charles?
I think this is really the first brand new episode of Star Trek we got to see on our own televisions in HD. This is the first time we really got high definition Star Trek. We had some HD conversions, but this is the first time we really had it where it was actually released in high def its first run. And it was big. It was big. It was massive. It was movie level. And it's like, wow, we're seeing movie level Star Trek TV shows. I think those of us on the show, the three of us, just had our jaws dropped and just could not believe what great Star Trek we were suddenly getting.
Yeah,
I couldn't
agree.
We just couldn't stop talking about. We couldn't stop talking about it, right, Eric?
No, yeah. We were all on board right from the beginning, and I think one thing that was kind of interesting about Discovery when it came out that took us all just a little bit of getting used to was the pace at which it moved. I mean, Discovery came on, and it is like things are on fire, and that story is moving, and it is trucking forward. And I know that I like that pace of storytelling. It's cool with me. It did take a little bit of getting used to, because I feel like you're 50, whatever it is, 47-minute long TNG episode. I mean, sometimes they would take those stories and they'd stretch them out just a little bit, and sometimes they'd take them and they'd compress them a little bit just because they had to fit into a specific amount of time. Discovery, they don't have to fit into a specific amount of time, and they just cranked through that story, and it was like story, 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 story. So I loved it right from the beginning. I loved the graphics. I loved how much they spent on special effects, and I loved how many women I saw on the ship. I think it was you know, I mean, Voyager, certainly you had a woman chief engineer, you had a woman captain, you know, in later seasons you would get other key women on the bridge. But I feel like Discovery was kind of like, we're going to start with women as the default, and then we're going to throw in a couple of dudes here and there rather than throwing in the token woman. So I thought that was kind of, that was just unique and, you know, very consistent with the idea that Star Trek is always trying to push that representation envelope forward.
And we didn't see the Discovery until the third episode, which was strange.
I know, that was... That was what was wild about it. And then after we see the Discovery and we see the Klingons, then we all went and did our internet research and re-remembered that Star Trek Phase 2 had shown us or was going to show us all of this stuff. They just never got it off the ground, right? Gene Roddenberry had drawn the Klingons like this. We or his people had drawn the Klingons like this. His people had drawn the Phase 2 Enterprise to look like a big triangle, kind of like this Discovery look. So it's cool that we went back and grabbed a bunch of stuff that never was used by Roddenberry in the past because of Star Trek, the motion picture, and we actually get to see it on screen. So just really special moment.
So those are our two big birthdays that I wanted to get out of the way at the top of the show. I just thought those were important to talk about a little bit. And now back to our regularly scheduled programming. So, guys, if you head over to our Facebook page at Trek Talking and Beyond, spell that out, you will see at the top of the page, Live Long and Prosper, and a simple question. Hey, tell us where you're listening from. And if you do that and you see a heart next to your name from yours truly, Uncle Jim, then you want to tune into the next podcast because your name is going to be immortalized as a not only a Star Trek fan, but a supporter of Trek Talking. So, Eric, who is on your list?
Jim, I am spending some time down under today, so I'd first like to say hello and send out a big live long and prosper to Ken Stewart, who is saying hello to us from Geelong in Victoria, Australia. That's right. Several supporters from Australia tonight. So, Ken, thanks very much for listening to us way down there and carrying that Trek Talking flag where you live. Also from Brisbane, Australia, we're saying hello and sending out a hearty kapla to Helen Bruner. Hello, Helen. Thank you so much for listening to us. And for being yet another Aussie on our list, we really appreciate it. Can't tell you how much it means to us that people on a different side of the planet actually listen to us. Thank you so much. Top fan Tania Jones is also checking in from Perth, Australia. That's right. I have some friends in Perth. So, Tania, say hi to Joe for me way down there in Perth. Thank you so much for listening to us. And my final fan shout-out this week goes out to Dave Plugeman, who is saying hello to us from the Netherlands. That's right, Holland, more than 50% of your landmass is below sea level. I don't know how you guys do that, but Dave says hello from Limburg. We say hello and live long and prosper to you. Charles, who would you like to say hello to?
Let's start off with Anita Gentry in the Seattle area. I was just up in Seattle over Labor Day weekend. Great weather. Linda Wilson from St. Peter's, Missouri. Manton, Eric might help me on that one. He's a little better on that.
Yeah, this is one of those French-Canadian ones. I think it's Lefebvre.
That sounds
good.
That's
my guess.
Let's go with that.
Yeah.
Let's go with that.
We're from Montreal, Canada. I'm not so good in my French. And top fan, David Martin from Michigan. David, who's on your list?
All right. So I guess who I have is Louis Beza from Texas. I'm from Houston. Houston? Something like that.
Houston. Houston.
You sure it's not Houston?
Houston, we have a problem.
You say Houston, you say Soho. When you're in New York City, you say Houston so that you could be Soho or NoHo. But when you're in Texas, you say Houston.
Okay. So hello to Louis Beza. Another one is Olivia Funkhauser. Is that Hauser or Hooser?
Hauser, absolutely Hauser.
Okay.
Yeah. How was that?
Mississippi, USA. Next on my list is Pamela Mayo Anthony from Michigan. And last on my list is Oni L. Bello from New Jersey. And Eric, back to you.
Coming back to me, I'm going to say hello and send out a big hearty kapla to Jonas Cohen Bruin, also from the Netherlands. I cannot wait to visit your country. Smiles and live long and prosperous going out to you. And wait, we're not done with the Netherlands, folks. We got lots more. We got Mike Hoffman from the Netherlands, who sends us a flag and a little tulip. Oh, that is adorable. Marcel Karst, also from the Netherlands. Live long and prosper to you. And finally, from beautiful Breda, all the way from Holland, we have Fred Springer, who also sends us the Dutch flag. Jim, who are you saying hello to?
Well, we're going to wrap up our fan shout-outs and say kapla to David Fleming, who's in the birthplace of Captain James T. Kirk himself, Iowa. We're also going to say live long and prosper to Mary Church, who's listening to us in Edmonds, Washington. We want to say thank you to listening to Janet Morgan, who's in Dundee, Scotland, which, by the way, is where my grandmother is from. So that's really cool. And last but not least, we want to say thank you and kapla to top fan Christopher Burrell, who's listening to us from Northeast Georgia. I hope you're safe down there in Northeast Georgia. So that wraps up our fan shout-outs. If you guys would like to hear your name on a future fan shout-out, just head over to our Facebook page and tell us where you're listening from and look for a heart next to your name from yours truly, Uncle Jim. And this is the part of the show where we do our Star Trek birthday.
That was not a Klingon song.
All right, guys, we always start off our Star Trek birthdays by remembering those members of our Star Trek family who sadly are no longer with us. And for that, we turn to Eric.
Yeah, Jim, we're going to remember 9 members of our Star Trek family who have gone before us today. The first is actor Robert Herron, who did play a Klingon, Kalus the Unforgettable, in TOS's episode The Savage Curtain, but perhaps is maybe more well-known in some ways for his stunt work. He, of course, was the stunt double for Jeffrey Hunter, way back in the Cage days, and then would receive uncredited, kudos for that in the Menagerie when they reused that footage. He was also an uncredited crew member named Sam in the episode Charlie X, and, would go on to play several roles throughout many films throughout his lifetime, but he was really a stuntman first and an actor second, and live to the ripe old age of 97 years old. So we send out our love and remembrances to good old Bob Herron, the first Kalus the Unforgettable that we get to see back in the TOS days. So happy birthday, Bob. We're also saying happy birthday this week to Shaman Glass, who, of course, played Benton in TOS's episode Mud's Women. We have a few Mud birthdays today. This is the first. And prior to his role on Star Trek, Glass, of course, made several appearances in Perry Mason and just had one film feature credit in 1960s epic Spartacus. So if you're going to do it once, that is the way to do it. Thank you, Shaman Glass, for your Star Trek contributions. Happy birthday. We're also saying happy birthday this week to Stephen Markell, who played Kova Thole in TNG's episode Allegiance. You remember Kova was the blue Mizarian from that episode, who enjoyed private meditation, who's considered one of the brightest in his race. And Stephen Markell also made several television appearances throughout his career. So happy birthday to Stephen. We're also saying happy birthday to Charles McCulley, who was the voice of Landru in TOS's episode The Return of the Archons, and also played Prefect Jarvis in TOS's A Wolf in the Fold, two very excellent episodes. He has such a presence and such a sort of aristocratic bearing that his voice, and his voice is amazing. So he was often cast throughout his career as judges, doctors, attorneys, and other figures of authority. And then if Paul was here, I'd give him a little chance to say more about this, but Charles McCulley is probably best known for his role as Count Dracula in the blaxploitation horror film Blackula from 1972. So Charles McCulley would have had a birthday this week. We're also saying happy birthday to Michael Dugan, who lived to the ripe old age of 90 years old. I love it. Michael Dugan, of course, played played the Kalar warrior in Star Trek's pilot episode, The Cage. The Kalar were those sort of like weird-looking alien barbarian dudes, I guess I would say. And Michael Dugan had myriad uncredited acting and stunt roles throughout the 50s and 60s. In fact, 64 acting credits and 9 stunt credits. So Michael Dugan would have had a birthday this week. We're also saying happy birthday this week to Richard Hurd, a titan among actors as far as I'm concerned. From a Star Trek standpoint, he is often associated with his role as Admiral Owen Paris from Voyager, from the episodes Pathfinder, Inside Man, Author, and Endgame. That, of course, is Tom Paris's dad. He was also in TNG as the Klingon Lakor in episodes Birthrights 1 and 2. But, man, he was all over the place. Jim, I know you love this one. In the 80s, our favorite secret aliens in disguise underneath human skin shells. How do we know Richard Hurd from V back in the day?
Oh, my God, I had nightmares for weeks after that when they pulled his face off and he was all scaly with his red eye underneath there. Oh, my God. Did that creep me out? And that was Richard Hurd.
Richard Hurd was the supreme commander of all the visitors. His name, of course, was John because they wanted him to be relatable to human beings, right? So,
before they eat you.
But that's not it, man. Yeah. But that's not it. I mean, Richard Hurd, he did a bunch of work with William Shatner in the 80s with T.J. Hooker. He was Admiral Noyce on Sequest DSV, which was also a very excellent science fiction series. He had a recurring role as Mr. Wilhelm in Seinfeld. And the thing that people don't know about Richard Hurd that I think is really cool is that he was actually the member of an Enterprise blues band. That's right, a musical group that writes and performs songs about Star Trek. So this man has Star Trek running through his veins, Richard Hurd, Tom Paris's dad, Anna Klingon, and so many other cool science fiction things would have had a birthday this week. He's one of those guys I kind of wish I could have met because it seems like there would have been a lot to talk to him about. So happy birthday, Richard Hurd. Three more remembrances. We're saying happy birthday this week to Roger C. Carmel. If you do not know who he is, then you need to go back and watch some more TOS because he was the original Harry Mudd. That's right, Harcord, Fett, and Mudd from TOS's episodes I, Mudd and Mudd's Women. And also he voiced his character in TAS's Mudd's Passion. So just really cool to have him in so many versions of Star Trek. Did you know that he's one of the only characters, let me see, with the exception of those actors who played the main crew members, right? Like, you know, Spock, Chekhov, all of those guys. So if you take those guys out of it, Roger C. Carmel and Mark Leonard are the only two characters who actually play themselves in more than one episode of TOS. Not themselves, but who play characters in more than one episode of TOS. So I think that's really cool that he's one of the only repeat guest stars. Good for him. In lots and lots of television from that time, I also have a special place in my heart because he was on the 1960s television series Batman that I used to watch at 3:30 every single day. He played Colonel Gum, a stamp-obsessed identity swapping villain. Do you remember this guy? He was like an evil stamp collector. Anyway, played by Roger C. Carmel. What a great television show and what a great actor. Happy birthday to him. We're also saying happy birthday to William Wyndham, who played Commodore Matt Decker in the original TOS Doomsday Machine. He was in a ton of stuff back in the day. Actually won an Emmy in 1970 for his role on the television show My World and Welcome to It. And our final fan shout-out, or excuse me, not fan shout-out, birthday remembrance goes out this week to Arthur Bernard, who played the character Apella in TOS's episode A Private Little War. I love that episode of TOS. If you haven't watched it, go back. If it's been a few years, go back and watch it again. It is always feels like it's spot on to whatever's going on in the world these days. And Arthur Bernard, he was an actor, but also he wrote, produced, and directed various radio and television and stage productions throughout his career in the 50s and 60s. So unfortunately, he would die in 2001 after he finally made it into a feature-length film called The Animal. That is his one and only film credit. So Arthur Bernard would have had a birthday this week. That is our remembrances. Wow. Charles, take it away with the folks who are still with us that have birthday this week.
Okay, and my apologies. It's been a long, busy week, and I did not get to get details about actors and actresses this week. I did a little bit last night, didn't find a whole lot about most of the people, but I will go through. Kieran Maroney played Benson in TNG's The Outrageous O'Connor and Shaw in Enterprise's Fortune Son. Lily Marie was the USS Saratoga Ops officer in DS9's Emissary. And
yeah, I gave that one.
IMDb does say IMDb says she's from Las Vegas, but I have not heard any details about her, so she must not really be hanging around much of the Star Trek groups. Sarah Rainey played Eleni in Boys Innocent. Dennis Danger Malone, Stuntman Extraordinaire.
We've had him on the podcast.
That one in there. He's been on the
podcast. Yeah, he was fun to talk to.
And he's got a lot of great stories.
He was the guy that just gets around in Star Trek The Motion Picture. He's the guy in the loading dock when the Enterprise pulls out. I know you guys know the scene I'm talking about. He's the guy in the spacesuit that jumps up and does a flip as the Enterprise flies out. He talked about that on the podcast. One of his many roles. He also taught the Klingons how to use their batliths, which is another cool thing.
And he's not only a stunt man, but he was a stunter also.
Yeah,
he did to protect the stunt men who were on the show.
And stunt women.
Stunt people.
Yep, stunt people.
Carolyn Lagerfeld played McFarlane, DS9's Tribunal. Robin Gemmell played Ambassador Murakon in DS9's Attached. And Scott Devaney played Bob Briggs in Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home. I believe that was the actor that we hated because he sent the whales off early in trying to get past the reporters, and the poor Enterprise had to convince the doctor to be able to find them and recover them.
And Jillian slapped him in the face and said that she didn't judge someone by their intelligence. Her compassion isn't judged by my intelligence level. Yep.
So, Eric, want to do some few living people?
Yeah, sure. Why not? I'm happy to have a shot at some of these. So I've got a happy birthday and big celebrations going out to Beth Trusaint, who of course played Aishara Yar, Tasha's sister in TNG's episode Legacy. I have to tell you guys, huge crush on her. There's something about that hairdo, that whole look that she's got going on. The fact that I had remembered her from shows like MacGyver and Matlock and Babylon 5 and all sorts of things. I loved her in this episode so much. So kind of a big crush on Beth Troussaint. So will you come on the podcast, please? Yes.
Did she not look like Sarah Connor from The Terminator?
Oh, that's what I'm saying. That whole, like, long hair, like, 80s, like, short, you know, sleeves, like, built woman look. I love that look. I love her look in that episode so much. So, Aishara Yar,
yep.
I'm in love with you. Beth, please come on the podcast. Happy birthday also to Rosalind Allen, who played Yanar on TNG's The Outrageous O'Connor, our second birthday from that episode this week. Also, happy birthday to Rosalind.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. She also was in Star Trek, or Sequest DSV. She was the telepathic doctor on Sequest DSV.
Yeah, man, there was something about that show that was so cool, and I just loved her on that. Wendy Smith, I believe, was the doctor's name, if I remember right. And yeah, she was so cool. Set in the year 2032, so we're almost there, guys. happy birthday also to another Rosalind Chow, who played Keiko O'Brien in TNG and DS9. Many, many episodes, and some people get kind of down on Keiko, but I dig Keiko. I loved her and Miles' relationship, and I love that you get to see kind of just regular folk on DS9. So Rosalind Chow, thank you for your Star Trek contributions as well. Happy birthday as well to Kari Hiroyuki Tagawa, who played the court bailiff in TNG's episode Encounter at Farpoint. He's the guy who rings the bell, if you remember him ringing the bell, of course. And also happy birthday to Oyin Oladejo, who, of course, plays Joanne Owushikun on Star Trek Discovery, also known as Owu, by Pike and the gang. So, Jim, why don't you finish out our birthdays?
Yeah, we're going to wrap up our birthdays. We've got a few here. We want to say happy birthday to Carolyn Cava, who played in TNG's episode Ethics as Dr. Toby Russell. That's the one where Worf breaks his back and he's never going to walk, and she has this experimental replacement. Really great episode, and it makes you wonder who was right, Beverly or Dr. Russell. That's for you to decide. Go and check it out. We also want to say happy birthday to Mimi Craven, who played Jisa in View and Voyage Dragon's Teeth. She was also married to Wes Craven, who's best known for the Nightmare on Elm Street movies. So happy birthday.
I didn't know that. Interesting.
Yep. We also want to say happy birthday to Shay Astar, who played Isabella in TNG's Imaginary Friend. And this
episode
is one that I just put in. I was going to stick it on Charles's list, but I didn't want to. I know Charles likes to look stuff up, so I didn't want to pop it in there because I wasn't sure. So I put it on mine instead. Denise Okuda. And Charles, did you want to say anything about Denise Okuda? Okay.
Oh, not really. Just great work that she's done.
Well,
okay, so Denise,
Michael, right, who the Okuda gram is literally named after. I mean, I think Michael Okuda is probably one of the most famous names in TNG lore. And Denise, of course, his wife, was able to participate too. So she did all kinds of stuff, right? Didn't she do – she did, like, scene painting and, like, did a bunch of, like, graphic stuff and, like, consulted with him. I feel like she was kind of his right-hand person as he developed all that stuff for TNG.
Yeah, she was a scenic artist on DS9 and Enterprise. She was a computer and video supervisor on Star Trek Voyager as well. And she's written several great Star Trek reference books with her husband. So happy birthday to Denise Okuda. I also want to say happy birthday to Jason Alexander, who played Kuros in Voyage the Thing, and is going to be a brand new reoccurring character named Dr. Gnome on Prodigy. We haven't seen him yet, but we're going to, and he's going to be a recurring character, basically a regular on Prodigy when his character shows up. And I always do the Klingons last? And this is a big one. Speaking of the fifth anniversary of Star Trek Discovery, we want to say kapla, and we come in peace to Chris Obi, who played Takuma in Discovery's The Vulcan Hello and the Battle of the Binary Stars. So happy birthday.
You dirty Federation. You never mean what you say.
Come in peace. God. And that wraps up our birthdays, guys. And now it's time for...
All right, we've got our very first convention that we're checking out. It is the Grit City Comic Show, October 22nd at the Greater Tacoma Convention Center in beautiful Tacoma, Washington. So go check that out. It's not too far away from me. Maybe I'll go check it out. We're also going to be tracking the Sinister Halloween Con, October 22nd at the Scottish Rite Masonic Center in beautiful Sacramento, California. And last on this list is Chattanooga's Comic-Con, the same weekend, October 22nd through the 23rd, at the Chattanooga Convention Center in Chattanooga, Tennessee. David, which conventions are you tracking?
Well, it sounds like we're going to go down to Texas to the Cowtown Comic-Con 2022 from October 22nd and the 23rd. Over at the Will Rogers Memorial Center at Fort Worth, Texas. Going a little bit more east is Old Bridge Comic Book Expo from actually just the first only day of October 23rd over at Old Bridge Elks, Old Bridge, New Jersey. Next on the list is over in Illinois, which is Anime Halloween, October 28th to the 30th, at the Hyatt Regency O'Hare Chicago in Rosemont, Illinois. Now, I just want to know, is everybody going to dress up and look like a cartoon, or?
Well, you have to look like an anime character, for sure.
Yeah. All right. Charles, what's on your list?
Well, why don't we just stick with the October 20th to 30th. Let's start off with Baltimore Comic-Con at the Baltimore Convention Center in Baltimore, Maryland. Or back over to Texas with the Big Texas Comic-Con at the Henry B. Gonzalez Convention Center, San Antonio, Texas. Or Music City Multicon, the Farm Bureau Exposition Center in Lebanon, Tennessee. Lot to do in those in that weekend.
That sounds interesting. Music City Multicon. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like there's a lot going on right there. Multicon feels like you're going to have some comics, you're going to have some sci-fi, you're going to have some horror, you're going to have a whole bunch of things.
Anime.
Anime. Sounds interesting. All right, guys, well, that wraps up our convention calendar, and we're ever creeping ever so closely to talking about Star Trek Lower Decks Reflections. We're almost there, so just hang with us. Our phone number here is 646-668-2433. If you want to give us a call and join in the conversation, you're welcome to do so. But right now, it's time for Star Trek News.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Incoming transmission.
Enter authorization code. Command codes verified. Define parameters of program. Level 9 authorization required.
Specify parameters.
Transfer of data is complete.
Okay, guys, this is the part of the show where we do our Star Trek news. All of the stories that we're about to talk about can be found in their entirety on our Facebook page, Trek Talking and Beyond. I've just kind of broke them down to get the news out to you guys. They're the abridged version. All right, Eric, you've got some sad news to start us off with.
Yeah, Jim, this one hit me kind of hard this week, mostly because this actress plays literally my favorite villain in all of Star Trek. Louise Fletcher, Oscar winner for One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, died this past week. That's right, Louise Fletcher, who won the Best Actress Oscar for her indelible performance as Nurse Ratchet in Milos Forman's One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, died Friday in her home in France, according to a representative. She was 88 years old. In the American Film Institute TV special AFI's 100 Years, 100 Heroes and Villains, Fletcher's Nurse Ratchet was named the fifth greatest villain in film history and second greatest villainess behind only the Wicked Witch of the West. On TV, Fletcher had played family matriarch Peggy Grammer Gallagher, a cunning ex-con who nevertheless wanted a relationship with her granddaughter on Showtime's Shameless. The actress recurred on Star Trek Deep Space Nine as the scheming, duplicitous spiritual leader Kai Wen Adami from 1993 to 1999, on cult sci-fi VR5 from 1995 to 97, and on ER in 2005. Other film credits include Exorcist II, The Heretic, starring with Richard Burton and Linda Blair, sci-fi Brainstorm with Christopher Walken and Natalie Wood, of course, the great film Firestarter, starring a young Drew Barrymore, and 2 Days in the Valley. The young actress made her screen debut in 1958 with appearances on Playhouse 90, among other television shows. The next year, she guested on Maverick, 77 Sunset Strip, and The Untouchables. She appeared on Perry Mason twice in 1960, but by 1963, she had abandoned her career, at least for the time being, after making her feature debut in A Gathering of Eagles. Fletcher was married to Bick, a Hollywood literary agent who was also later a producer from 1959 to 1978. He died in 2004, and she is currently survived by her sons, John Dashiell Bick and Andrew Wilson Bick. Man, guys, Louise Fletcher, Kai Wen, she, to me, is just one of the absolute best villains of all time, and I know that a lot of people will throw Khan in there. They'll throw other possibilities. But the reason that I love her is that she never completely gets her redemption arc, right? All throughout DS9, Kai Wen believes all along that she's doing the right thing while simultaneously kind of being addicted to gaining power and always feeling like she needs to be in a power position. And I just love her because every single time you see her on screen, you absolutely hate her guts. She's like the Dolores Umbridge of Star Trek, right? Always does whatever she does with a smile. And I just love that about her. I love that she's so evil and so nice and absolutely drives Kira crazy throughout the entire run of DS9. So Louise Fletcher, man, I would have loved to have met you. I'm so sorry that you died before I got a chance, but we did lose her this week, you guys. Would you like to say anything about Louise Fletcher?
Yeah, I was about to say that she seems like the only type of villain that I know of in Star Trek that actually had a character arc. She started off as like, you know, just becoming the Kai Wen. And you don't really get to know her until later when she starts to, like, slowly grow. And it's like all of a sudden, like you said, she wanted the position of power and everything. And then all of a sudden it just became a villain. I mean, she from my perspective, she didn't really become a villain until, like, of course, way at the end. But, yeah, it's interesting to think that she's, like, the only villain that had a character arc that I can think of.
Villainess.
There you go.
Yeah, she's a bad lady. Absolutely. All right, so who's next on our list? I think David's got our next story, right?
All right, so it looks like we have a story about Gate McFadden. Star Trek Picard, Gate McFadden worked on David Bowie's Labyrinth. Who knew? Okay, so before Gates McFadden, who in the role of Dr. Beverly Crusher on Star Trek The Next Generation taught Data to dance, choreographer Terrell McFadden, Gates' first name, taught Mr. Let's Dance himself, David Bowie, how to waltz on the set, labyrinth. Originally, McFadden was cast to play the role of Sarah's mother and agreed to do the choreography in addition. However, due to the British labor laws, she was not permitted to appear on screen, even though she had been told for 2 years that she would fulfill both roles and instead only perform the choreographer's role. At the Jim Henson Company, she was also the director of choreography and puppet movement for 1984's The Muppet Take Manhattan, in which she also appeared on screen in the role of Nancy, secretary to Martin Prince. Not exactly sure who that is. Anyways, McFadden continues to be involved in the Trek community as well. In 2021, she narrated and executive produced the Center Seat 55 Years of Star Trek, a documentary series for the History Channel. She also hosts a podcast featuring many guests who will be familiar with Trekkies. Gates McFadden investigates.
Yeah.
Cool.
What's cool about that, people have to remember, Star Trek has been around for a long time. And a lot of people, younger people in particular, aren't aware that Gates McFadden was a choreographer and worked with David Bowie before she was on Star Trek. And I just thought that was a cool little twist. And I just thought there's a lot of people out there who might not know that. And so even though I know that, I figured there might be people who did not know that. So I actually threw that story in there for Paul because I thought Paul would get a kick out of that story, but that's why
and I will say, Jim, that I think Paul would have gotten a kick out of it, particularly because I know that his son loves the Muppets, and I remember seeing her in the Muppets Take Manhattan and not knowing who she was, right? Because Star Trek wouldn't come until later, and there really wasn't a way. And then later I would watch Muppets Take Manhattan again after I had seen Star Trek and be like, oh my God, it's Dr. Crusher. She's in the movie. So cool.
And she danced with David Bowie. I mean, who can say that? You know, who can say that?
Well, she taught him how to dance even. I mean, that's even better.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that whenever she's on panels, and Charles can attest to this, I'm sure, she often will talk about her dancing and choreography experience and about how it relates to the different projects that she's been on, including Star Trek.
Absolutely. Yep. Speaking of Charles,
dance, magic, dance.
You're up next, Charles.
Yeah, I think I see a theme in the news this week for me. The new Star Trek series is officially a Deep Space Nine sequel, whereas what I've heard calling it Season 8. Mm-hmm. IDW Publishing revealed their ongoing Star Trek comic series will be headed by co-writer Colin Kelly and Jackson Lazing. The series will feature a collection of fan favorite characters like Captain Benjamin Stamets, Sisko, and a brand new ones embarking on adventures, such as Jackson Lazing has announced that IDW's new Star Trek series will be a direct sequel to the acclaimed Star Trek Deep Space Nine television show. At the end of Deep Space Nine, Captain Sisko was last seen embracing his role as the emissary to the godlike wormhole aliens known as the Prophet. Sisko plunged into Inferno while grappling with long-term nemesis Gal Dukat, only to be lifted in the Prophet's Celestial Temple, a.k.a. the Bajoran wormhole, via their divine intervention. The exact nature of Sisko's fate was left open-ended, But now in a comic, Benjamin Sisko's returned from the Bajoran wormhole with a task from the prophet. Something in Star Trek universe is hunting down and killing the galaxy's godlike being, and the prophets have put their faith in Sisko to stop them. Star Trek number one aims to boldly go where Star Trek hasn't gone before, while bringing plenty of old memories along for the voyage. What comes next for Captain Sisko in the Alpha Quadrant is currently an unwritten chapter in Star Trek history. The voyages of the USS Sias will begin this October 26, 2022, and will pick right up where DS9 left off 20 years ago. Star Trek number one will be released by IDW Publishing, as said, on October 26th.
Wow. I love that. That is so cool. I mean, you guys know who Colin is, right? He is a guy who was involved in, I think, what I would consider the show's favorite comic book series over the last few years. He was involved in year five. He was involved in all that great, like, Gary Seven time, or not timeline, but, like, those issues that had Gary Seven. Basically all that later stuff in year five. Colin Kelly was involved in that, and he was so good in that, right? Like, that comic book series is so good. And he has all kinds of other credits to his name, too. He's worked on DC stuff. He's worked on Marvel stuff. He's worked on now IDW stuff. So a very talented writer. Very excited about this.
Yeah, a lot to talk about on comic books.
Mm-hmm.
And, guys, as we said, it's the fifth anniversary of Star Trek Discovery. This next article was originally published on September 26, 2017. The Vulcan Hello greets nearly 10 million viewers. When speaking of the success of Star Trek Discovery has already had in driving CBS All Access subscriptions, we describe that as one of several metrics by which the success of the new series could be gauged. Now, with the release of the initial ratings for the show's broadcast premiere, we have another of those criteria available to us, and it's likewise looking very good. According to the initial figures, Sunday's broadcast premiere of Star Trek Discovery garnered a 9.6 million viewers and a 1.9 rating among adults aged 19 to 49. CBS anticipates that these numbers will jump to 15 million viewers and a 3.0 rating once the so-called Live Plus 7 ratings are available. The Live Plus 7 ratings represent the final determination of a show's audience and allows for the inclusion of time-shifted viewing through such methods as DVR recording. Discovery is already being credited with a record number of new all-access subscriptions. While that may not be the whole story, it's hard to see it as anything other than a good start, given CBS' stated goal of boosting subscriptions from 1 million to 4 million by 2020. And if I remember correctly, I think they blew that $4 million subscription rate right out the window. I think they went, if I remember correctly, I think it was closer to 12 million. If I remember, we talked about it.
Yeah, they did. And at this point, CBS All Access is up to 19.2 million subscribers. So they are cranking.
They're now Paramount Plus, so that's awesome. All right, Charles, and you've got another story, and I think this one's kind of familiar too, isn't it?
As I said, I think there's a theme in my articles tonight. Star Trek Strange New Worlds comes to comics in new miniseries. Strange New Worlds is making its comic debut this winter in a series from IDW Publishing. It bridges the gap between Season 1 and Season 2. Since it debuted earlier this year, Strange New Worlds has become a flagship show of Paramount Plus streaming series, debuting to critics and fan acclaim. Now, Strange New Worlds is receiving a new miniseries from IDW. At the conclusion of the first season show, First Officer Una Chen Riley, also referred to as Number One, is arrested by Federation officials on the charges of illegal genetic modifications. While fans curious about Una's fate must wait until the second season premiere, a new comic from IDW fills in the gaps. as Captain Pike struggles to prove her innocence. The Strange New World miniseries titled The Illyrian Enigma will be written by Kristen Beyer and Mike Johnson, both of whom have done extensive work in both Star Trek comics and television. It will be illustrated by Megan Levin. The Illyrian Enigma writing team has also worked on the show itself, ensuring the same quality of a hallmark of Strange New Worlds will be present in the comics as well. It will also help keep continuity between the shows and the comics tight. The first issue goes on imprint and digital December 21st.
Wow, I'm looking forward to
and
that.
I'll wait for the 21st. Yeah.
Wow. Jim's going to get his man crush on in comic book form.
Exactly.
In comic books, yo. Yo, the comic crush.
You're going to, like, photocopy the full spread page that they have of Pike's face with his amazing hair, and you're going to put it up on your wall at work.
I hope they draw him. I hope they draw him right.
They better draw him, with some amazing Paramount hair.
These are the same guys that did The Light of Chaos, which I think was an outstanding comic. So I'm looking for that we saw in that.
Yeah, Kirsten Beyer and Mike Johnson are the team that you want writing your Star Trek comic book. So I have no question that this is going to be good stuff.
So here's a question regarding the comic book. Is the comic book the only way that you're going to know what happened to Una, or are they going to actually show it in season two as well? So is there going to be a conflict between the two? Or
no, there has been a precedent, and I'm going to answer this, David, with some amount of confidence, even though I don't actually know because we don't actually have inside connections, but they're probably going to do the same thing that they did with Picard, which is that they provided information between seasons that was never actually acknowledged in the show, but is completely consistent with the story. So I think that you could consider this comic to be one of those canon adjacent ones, right? You've got Kristen Beyer and Mike Johnson, who have actually written the show, who are carrying the torch right now. They're providing this information, and I have no doubt that there will be zero inconsistencies between this comic and what we actually see at the beginning of season two. But I don't think they'll acknowledge it in season three. That'd be my guess.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And Eric, you've got another story. You're next on our hit list.
Yeah, this one's another. I got two sad stories this week. This one is that Star Trek IV, that's right, our new Chris Pine Star Trek, has been officially now removed from Paramount Pictures' release calendar. Paramount Pictures has now removed the Star Trek film set for release on December 22nd of next year. That's right. The news first came from the trades, with Variety noting the move was, quote, inevitable following the news from last month of director Matt Shockman's exiting the project. This Star Trek project was already delayed once before Paramount previously set a June 2023 release date. The film appeared to have momentum in February of this year when producer J.J. Abrams announced plans to move forward with another film in the Kelvin Universe era, with hopes for production to begin this fall. And while Chris Pine and other stars have all expressed their interest in doing a fourth film, they also expressed skepticism it could move ahead that quickly. Earlier this month, Pine was still talking about how he would like to see a script. So it feels kind of like we got all excited about nothing here, guys. It's off the calendar. So we just have to keep our fingers crossed and hope that maybe this comes back over the next couple of years. Because it would be fun to see a fourth Kelvin movie.
Yeah, they're just stalling. They're going to come out with it this coming Christmas. To find out.
Yeah.
I don't know about that, but maybe. You're a very optimistic person, David. I like that.
Well, you got to figure it takes them a year to film it and then a year in post-production. And if they wanted to get it out by 2023, the filming should have already been completed. And
yeah.
They didn't even have a... So,
yeah. We sort of knew this was coming, but it's still disappointing to hear.
Yeah, it is. Because Star Trek, I
think... Well, when you got... when you got the actors who sit there and say, I haven't seen a script or anything, it's like, you know, something's not working out.
Well, we get enticed by articles that say, you know, oh, Chris Pine would love to play Captain Kirk for the rest of his career, da-da-da-da. Well, yeah, he would love to, but we need the writers to put the money where the mouth is here.
Yeah, absolutely. So, David, I mean, I try to tailor the stories to the person, and I hopefully our next story is right up your alley.
All right, cool. So it looks like we have a Star Trek Prodigy Supernova game warping out of the Delta Quadrant this October. The new game arrived October 14th for PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Xbox One, Nintendo Switch, and through Steam and Stadia for PC gamers. I know this is true because I looked it up on Steam, and it is actually coming out on October 14th. So, and features a full television voice cast who reprise their roles as their animated characters in the interactive adventure, allowing up to two players to lead the Protostar crew during gameplay. As Dal and Gwyn, of course, the trailer features a variety of puzzles and combat challenges using elements from Star Trek Prodigy series, including Starfleet phasers and Gwyn's morphing metal weapon. Did they ever come up with a name for that? I'm not exactly sure.
I don't know if they did either.
Okay. So the game synopsis. After the USS Protostar picks up strange readings from the dying star, Dal and Gwyn must race against time to save their friends. Their ship and their entire planetary system before the supernova destroys them all, using their unique skills to overcome ingenious puzzles, endure hostile environments, and battle deadly robot armies. Dal and Gwyn must save their captured crewmates, Jankom, Pog, Rocktok, I hope I'm saying all these names correctly, Zero, and Murph. But they soon encounter a deadly new enemy, one that will stop at nothing to destroy the USS Protostar and change the very course of history. Star Trek Prodigy Supernova is coming in at maximum warp speed this October on PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Nintendo Switch, Xbox One, Xbox S, Steam, and Stadia. Price tag at
$39.99.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm going to have to check that out. I'm going to get
like
that for
games.
Sure.
Yeah.
I like stuff like that. Absolutely. All right, guys.
Yeah,
I've got I've got the final story of the evening, and that's because it's a great segue for our Star Trek Lower Decks conversation. Star Trek hints TNG era knows about Abrams' Kelvin timeline. Dun, dun, dun. A hilarious shout out to J.J. Abrams' Star Trek movies by Ensign Tavana Tendi and Sam Rutherford on Star Trek Lower Decks could secretly mean Starfleet in the 24th century is aware of the Kelvin timeline. In Star Trek Lower Decks Season 3, Episode 5, Reflections, Rutherford's implement malfunctions, allowing his previous personality to become dominant, and it drops more hints about the insidious reason Sam received an implant in the first place. But there is further possibility that Rutherford's implant contains secrets about the Kelvin timeline that he doesn't fully understand. When Rutherford confesses to Tendi that he's been losing sleep because of a nightmare, she asks, is it the one where you're in a new timeline with Kirk and Spock and they have cinematic chemistry? On the surface, this could just be a read as a knowing wink to the animated Star Trek comedy, and Lower Decks has jokingly referenced Abrams' Star Trek in the past, such as in Lower Decks Season 1, Episode 9, Crisis Point. But what if there's even more behind Tendi's quip? After all, Rutherford is routinely bombarded with information from his implant that he chalks up to malfunction. Yet what if Rutherford just doesn't realize that his implant's details about an alternate timeline, Kirk and Spock, are actually real? Star Trek Discovery Season 3 reverted that to the 32nd century. United Federation of Planets has long been aware of the Kelvin timeline. Temporal wars were waged centuries before that threatened the multiverse and even the Guardian of Forever. Paul Geisel hid in the Beta Quadrant rather than be used as a weapon in the Temporal Wars. Dr. Kovich revealed to Dr. Hugh Colbert that a time soldier named Lieutenant Commander Yor from the 24th century of the Kelvin timeline crossed over into the Prime timeline. Star Trek Lower Decks joke about an alternate reality. Kirk and Spock may indeed have deeper layers and possibly even ramifications further on down the line. That could be a great way for them to bring the Kelvin timeline in a full circle and tie it right back into the original timeline if they wanted to. You know,
I'm of course freaking out about this because I love stories that are all about the connection between the Kelvin timeline and the Prime timeline. And of course in Discovery they mention here that we get the little connection there. So man, when they did it in Lower Decks tonight, I was just like, what? Are you kidding me? I'm so excited.
Well, they did it on screen when Kirk sits down to talk with Pike and he says, so your father was a commander of the USS Kelvin, and then they kind of cut the scene at that point. So they kind of...
That's right. The only movies that we have that information from are the Kelvin timeline movies. Supposedly it did. I mean, remember, though, that when that happens in those Kelvin timeline movies, it is in the Prime universe. So the fact that he is the captain of the Kelvin is actually a Prime timeline source and not a Kelvin universe source, so to speak.
Well, the captain of technically wasn't the captain because... what's his face?
No, that's true.
Captain.
No, no, you're right. First officer. Sorry. Well, you're right.
Right. First officer. All right, guys, we're about to talk about Reflection Season 3, Episode 5 of Star Trek Lower Decks. Mariner and Boimler work the Starfleet recruitment booth at an alien job fair while Rutherford challenges himself. And just to get you guys prepared, here's a little soundbite.
Captain's log, Stardate 58354.2. The Cerritos is back at Tolgana 4, where we'll be updating the Federation Consulate's power systems. A straightforward job, which gives us extra time to fill some of our Starfleet quotas.
The recruitment booth, no!
Well, someone's got to do it.
Do they? Because last time I checked, nobody's ever signed up for Starfleet at the recruitment booth. I did! You're not helping! Sorry!
I know it's not super exciting, but it's our assignment. What are you going to do?
Complain the whole time and make it twice as miserable?
That is your specialty.
All right, so every week I ask you guys on our Facebook page on a scale of 1 to 10 to score this week's episode. We tally up the scores, and we give them to you guys. So, Eric, what did our Facebook fans say about Reflections?
Well, top fan Lincoln William Statler gave it a warp 9.9. That's pretty good. James Young said 8. Glad to finally start to see some backstory. Stephen Whalen said a 10. Top fan Brian King gave it a full 10 for me. Definitely the best episode of the season so far. Top fan Richard Chang gave it a 9. Loved getting some of Rutherford's backstory and bold Boimler unleashed at the career fair. Smiley face. I agree, Richard. Laura Robles gave it a 10. Double heart on that one. Alexander L. Harris, also a 10 with an exclamation point. Travis Taylor clocked in at a 7, while John Forbes gave it a 9. And Robert B. Molinoff gave it an 8. Great episode, but not legendary or with a teachable, rememberable notion to go back to and discuss in 5 years. Oh, that is super insightful, Robert. I'm going to talk about that later. That gives us, Jim, a fan score overall for this episode of 9.1, which is pretty darn good. That puts it third of the five episodes that we have seen so far, but only just a skosh behind episode one, which fans gave a 9.3, and episode three, which fans gave a 9.2. So it's right there.
And every week, guys, we do cadet training, which is where we tell you guys what episodes you can go back and watch to learn a little bit about this week's episode. So for that, we turn to Charles. Take it away, Charles.
All right. Let's start off with Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. TNG, The Most Toys, Season 3, Episode 22. We learn about Taylor Toph's Species Collector. Voyager, Season 5, Episode 3, Extreme Risk. Season 6, Episode 8. Episode 8, One Soft Step. And a couple of those in there. We learn about the Delta Flyer. TNG's Captain's Holiday, Season 3, Episode 19. Cupid, Season 4, Episode 22. DS9's Q-Less, and Season 1, Episode 7. All episodes that we learned about Bash.
Yes. And
oh, gosh.
I wanted to mention something to you guys. I was watching that episode, and I saw an alien on the episode, and I'm like, that alien looks so familiar. Where have I seen that alien? I couldn't place it. And then I placed it. The guy with the melty face that we see is actually an Octorian, and the only place he appears is on the album cover of Star Trek The Motion Picture. When you pull out the album, if you guys ever remember the LP, on the inside of the LP, on the sleeve, there are 12 aliens pictured from the motion picture. The Octorian with the melted face is one of them. I knew I saw it somewhere, and it took me a while to find it, but that melty-faced alien is actually on the inside album sleeve of Star Trek The Motion Picture and is an Octorian. Wow.
I get you guys one more. What movie title was mentioned in this episode?
I think it's something that we want to discover that may be undiscovered.
Exactly. let's go visit some undiscovered country.
I loved it. All right, guys, so this is the part of the show where we talk about Star Trek Lower Decks Reflections. Our phone number here is 646-668-2433. All right, so the first clip that I want to play for you guys is the clip that I talked about in my little story called The Kelvin.
You okay, Rutherford? Damn, you look white.
I haven't slept in a week. I keep having the same crazy nightmare.
Ooh, the one where you're in a new timeline with Kirk and Spock where they have cinematic chemistry?
I wish.
Looks like you've got some long-term memories stuck in the buffer. Probably useless stuff like when you called the captain Mom. Want me to purge the cache?
Yes, anything to help me sleep.
And done. Why don't you go take a nap? You'll wake up feeling like a new man.
Thanks, Tendi. Hope you're right.
So that sets up the entire episode as far as Rutherford's part of the story goes. And that was the story I talked about where they mentioned the Kelvin universe yet again. And we see Rutherford on a table and there's shadowy figures working on him. And I can't help but wonder if maybe those figures are in the Kelvin universe. And that's where the headpiece actually originated from. Who knows? But it's fun to postulate these things and fan theory them. What do you think? What do you guys think? What do you think, Eric?
I thought that was a really cool insight into what was going on with Rutherford, and we have been waiting for a very long time because they've been teasing us for since season two about what was the cause of Rutherford having this implant. So I love that we got just a little bit more information about that in this episode, and it was one of many, many, many amazing Easter eggs in this episode.
Yeah, and you know what? When I go to do the sound bites, it's so hard for me to pick just three because there's so many, you know, that it's tough. But I manage.
you manage, and I know maybe after we go through our sound bites for the evening, we'll go back through some of these other Easter eggs that we're not going to get a chance to cover tonight because there were so many in this episode. It was kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. Oh, it was great. It was great. All right, guys. So the next one that I want to play for you guys is basically just entitled, I was going to call it Bold Boimler, but that was already used, so I called this Mad Boimler.
I'm sorry, I can't. This guy actually thinks the uniforms are cool.
They are cool.
Then why are they always changing?
Starfleet updates them. There's always room for improvement. Like we get this really cool flap.
Oh, please, why do you even need uniforms? You are not in the military.
I'd say they are. Oh, shut up!
Us outpost scientists wear whatever we want. Like this belt. Can you wear a belt?
Ha, they can wear jewelry. Oof.
That was my rank fit!
Without Starfleet, none of you would exist! We don't want to protect you from the Klingons and the Borg. We just want to explore and study f***ing quasars. But you know what? It's the right thing to do.
Go get back in the booth. Some phantom shows up.
Stupid f***ing truthers, you hate the truth. You're just a bunch of pathetic, gossipy weirdos. Collecting evil stupid. It doesn't make you happy. Your ships smell like ass.
Boimler, get back here.
Getting people trapped inside of games. Stop trapping people inside of games.
Is that guy with you?
Yes, but that behavior is not.
If being in Starfleet gives you that kind of confidence, then I want in. He just told a Ferengi to.
Oh, yeah. Hey, do you like engineering?
Love it. You guys do that kind of stuff?
Oh, absolutely. They got a whole division for it.
The doctor didn't spend 7 years in the Delta Quadrant for you to question his agency. He's got rights.
I don't even know where to begin.
The
references that were thrown in there, Boimler freaking out. And what you can't see on the clip is he had a little model of a Stargazer, a Picard Stargazer from TNG, not the Picard one, on the table. And every time someone walked by, they'd bump into it and knock off one of the warp nacelles. And he kept putting it back together and putting it back together. And by the time that scene comes around, when the scientists walk up, they knock into the table, and all four warp engines fall off the ship, and then she flicks off his pit, and that touches him off. I loved it, because that's the type of thing you'd expect from Mariner, but not from Boimler. I loved it.
Nope.
Charles, what did you think about that scene?
Well, just him all over the place, stomping, the insult, just getting mad. It's like, it was nice to see him just get some energy out. In fact, I love how this resolved.
And what he
because
sees
like, okay.
is hilarious.
Yeah.
Because it's true. The stuff he's saying is true. It's like, it's funny. Because it's true.
It is.
You know?
And just the fact is that, gee, maybe you don't really need to have Starfleet along with all of these rogue groups.
Yeah. Well, Eric, any thoughts on this clip?
Yeah, I mean, following up on what Charles just said, this clip points out that Starfleet is not your only path to having space adventures, right? And I think that our Petra, I'll call her Indiana Petra, because to me she seems like an Indiana Jones type character. She's the one who's kind of the foil for what's going on with Boimler in this scene. And I love that Boimler finally just freaks out. I must admit that my favorite line from this whole tirade that he goes on, or not that he goes on, but that one of the other people says, the scientist people, they're like, oh yeah, you get a uniform and this and that. And the guy, he says, can you wear a belt? And that to me is so hilarious, right? Because the TNG style uniforms don't have a belt. And that is the same style of uniform that the people on the Cerritos are wearing right now. And so so it's almost like they've been denied the ability to wear a belt, which of course was featured in the motion picture, right? we get Star Trek belts in the motion picture. So I just thought that was so funny. And then, of course, we get the other great reference from the great DS9 episode, Move Along Home, where Boimler is like, stop trapping people inside of games. And you'll remember that's episode where the Wadi dude is so addicted to games that he ends up trapping people inside the game. I just thought that was so funny. And there are so many other visual references that you can't see from the audio clip. You know, they show the 3D chessboard in that scene. They show the Katarn game devices from the game, which is that one where Wesley has to put on the headset and try and get, what is it? It's like little cones or something into something. I don't know.
Ball
it's like a little game. And then, of course, they reference the least dangerous game with the Batlets and stuff. So super fun scene. And I love that Boimler finally gets a chance, like Charles just said, to just let go, right? Man, let all his defenses down. He's a human being. He's us in Starfleet. Every once in a while, we're going to break and we're going to go on a tirade that we're going to regret later. And that was Boimler in this episode.
Yep, it was great. What did you think about that one, David? Anything in that clip you want to mention?
Yeah, the name of the archaeological lady, anybody get the name of why she's probably called that? And it's probably obvious because of the Indiana Jones Last Crusade, where they went to go explore that Petra.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, so I thought that was a little interesting thing there. So I liked that whole scene. It was very I had to rewatch it a couple of times because of the way they were speaking so fast and the subtitles like zipping by. I was like but other than that, it was really fun. I enjoyed it.
Well, and I got
this episode. I'm just going to mention that one of the things that was on the table, so you get the collector's table, right? We didn't really get into the collectors at all, but one of the things that they have on that table, if you really start digging into the references here, is that they have the D'Arce pedestal from the episode Masks, which, of course, was referenced in last week's episode of Lower Decks with the whole, like, Captain Freeman freaking out while she was wearing the mask, right? So I feel like it's like deep-level references, man. You are not going to catch all of these unless you're a super deep Star Trek fan, which makes it so fun.
And the conspiracy theorists too. They were.
Oh my God, the truthers! Like we didn't even get to talk about the truthers here. I mean, they were asking about like what was the truth about Sisko, right? Like what actually happens to him after the DS9 finale? And I don't know if you guys noticed or not, but there's that at one point they show kind of the background behind the truthers' booth there at the career fair. And they actually show one of those, the CSI, like a bunch of pictures with a bunch of strings connecting things together to show how things are connected. And they show that picture, and it has Shax, it has a Mugatu, it has an alien from Momo's planet, which is the people who worshipped Agamus from last season. And it has a picture of Queen Paloma, who, of course, is Billup's mom. So I think this was our first clue to what happens to Shaq when he dies, and I think it involves Queen Paloma. That is my prediction.
Oh, interesting.
I thought it was funny when they were talking about the Starfleet officers get bugs that crawl up their butt, and Boimler's like, that never happened.
Yeah.
And Mariner's like, well,
it actually
is.
Oh my gosh. And of course that's from Sub Rosa. That's like the Sub Rosa reference, which is such a funny reference anyway, and we were talking about Beverly Crusher earlier today.
That's just hilarious. All right, guys, I've got one more clip to play for you guys, and then we're gonna rate the episode and see how close we came to what our Facebook fans had to say. And this clip is just called Starfleet Drone.
Wow, it's
crazy to hear you, like, actually trying.
Yeah, I have to. Ransom's got it out for me. I'm not taking any chances with creepy-ass Starbase 80.
Do you have to go to Starfleet Academy to work on a ship?
Ah, thank you for asking. No, not at all. You can enlist as an NCO and then go to the Tech Services Academy on Mars. You could work in a transporter bay. How about that?
Really? Do the transporter guys ever get to sit on the bridge?
I mean, I guess it could happen.
Hey, pal, you're signing up for 7 years in a windowless room.
Wait, really?
Don't listen to her. The ships have, like, tons of windows. It's, like, practically a greenhouse, right? Just not, like, every single room.
Meh.
What the hell, lady? I was about to close.
Aw, did I step on your little sales pitch?
What are you even? Some kind of space archaeologist?
Independent space archaeologist. That first part's important since, you know, I'm free to do whatever I want. Unlike some ensigns around here.
All right, fine, whatever. Starfleet, get your Starfleet. Prepare yourself for Warp 10 excitement. Discover the undiscovered country.
How often do you get to collect dilithium?
Oh, all the time. Tons of crystals.
Hey, buddy, you want to be a Borg?
What? No!
Starfleet crews get assimilated all the time. Hope you like being covered in black rubber tubing.
We don't not.
Borg drone, Starfleet drone. What's the diff?
The diff is I'm about to shove one of those artifacts up your ass.
Don't. Just stay focused.
I love Mariner. I'm going to shove that artifact up your ass. Oh, man. What can I say? Loved it. Yeah. What did you guys think about the clip? About Mariner working the booth? Pretty good.
Different.
Yeah, definitely different. So,
well, she's throwing out reference after reference while she's doing that, right? She's like, anybody who's watched any Star Trek, you know, she's like, discover the undiscovered country and all of the other things she says. So you're just
strange
like,
new world
pulled,
that he discovered.
Yeah, you're like pulled right in. So I love that because that to me, she says something about preparing for Warp 10 excitement. And so that would not mean anything to you unless you understood that Warp 10 is unachievable and you turn into a salamander if you go to Warp 10. So
that's right.
Yeah.
It was pretty exciting.
Oh, man. I remember that Paul, one of the things that he said at the beginning of the series was like, is the series just references? And that's all there is to it. And I think that over the last few weeks, we've proved that there is more depth to this show than just the references. But man, as Star Trek geeks, we sure do have a lot of fun with those, don't we?
Well, yeah. Let's talk about the episode. This episode, I loved this episode. Not as much as the Batleth one. Let's get there. Okay. But I loved this episode. And to me, this episode felt really close to live-action Star Trek. I didn't play any clips from the Rutherford thing because the Rutherford thing, to me, was like the soul of this episode.
Classics. Well, it's classic
That's
Star
what,
Trek. I mean, the whole idea of like somebody talking to an evil version of himself. I mean, you've got the enemy within where Kirk is split into his like good and evil selves, right? Like to me, that just spoke right to episodes just like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was Star Trek to its core. The whole Rutherford backstory thing, we get to learn about a character. You know, we see the Romulan neutral zone. I mean, the Delta Flyer, there was so much there that they packed into Rutherford's story. And then they throw in this hilarious stuff with Boimler and Mariner at the Starfleet booth. And both of those things balanced each other off perfectly.
Yeah.
And it made
episode
really well. It felt really good together, and I really enjoyed it. Really. And to the point where I think I would give this episode maybe 9.5 would be my score. I really liked it a lot. What about you, Charles?
Okay. One of my Easter eggs I want to hit. I said in my cadet review, Wrath of Khan. What was a famous line from Wrath of Khan?
Remember.
I saw that and it's like,
so amazing.
Ah, there's Wrath of Khan right there.
Yeah.
There's Spock and McCoy.
Well, and I have to say, I'm always talking, Charles, about how one of my favorite episodes of TOS is Devil in the Dark. I just think that is one of those episodes that really teaches you to see things from somebody else's perspective. And it's kind of the first example that we get of our Starfleet crew trying to communicate with an alien that just doesn't speak in the same way that we do, right? It's this weird, like, silicone-based thing that, like, digs through walls and stuff. And we get a Devil in the Dark reference in this episode, too, because the little standee that is next to the booth that Mariner and Boimler are running is a... You can stick your face in it, and you can become Kirk and Spock. And what's in the background? It's a Horta from The Devil in the Dark. So
I didn't even notice
probably
that.
That was probably my favorite reference from this whole episode. I saw the Horta, and I was like, holy crap, that's one of my favorite episodes of TOS.
But it was hard to do a good cadet review because there were so many references. So many things they hit in here that just snuck in that just, for an average person, he's just going off. For the Trekkie fans, he's hitting all these classic moments. And that's what makes Lower Decks so good, is it's an homage to Star Trek.
Absolutely. So what would you give it, Charles? A score to 1 to 10.
Let's do what I've been giving a lot of the good episodes, a 9.0.
So we got a 9.0. Great. I gave it a 9.5. How about you, Eric?
You know, Jim, honestly, I can't disagree with your 9.5. There are so many references here that I was like, it was like drinking from a fire hose of Star Trek awesomeness. And then also... You get the background information on Rutherford. You get a great story involving Boimler and Mariner here. So I just really totally dug this episode. Not quite as good as The Least Dangerous Game because that had the whole like D&D nerd factor involved. But I'm still going to give this one a 9.5. It was very good.
And David, you get to bring up the caboose. What would you give this episode on a scale of 1 to 10?
Well, it was going to be a little bit lower, but since I came up with this theory about Rutherford's backstory, about how he and he's tied in with the whole Kelvin universe, I don't know if I have time to talk about that, but I'll try to be quick. So didn't Paramount mention that they were going to be coming out with a Section 31 series?
That's been in the talks for a while, yes.
And who is supposed to be the leader of that Section 31?
Ash Tyler.
Well, we don't know. Yeah, I mean, Ash Tyler is supposed to be the one who's the main person, right?
Okay, and wasn't Giorgio also going to be in there too from the the Ultimate Universe?
Yep.
Could she be also in the whole plot line where Rutherford gets his cybernetic thing and it could be that Section 31 could have put it on it?
Possible.
Anything is possible. I mean, we don't know where Carl sent her. It's totally possible.
Yeah, I don't know. I was putting those together. I was like, you know, that's probably why the TNG might know about the alternate universe and it comes through Giorgio from the Section 31 timeline thing. So I thought that was kind of interesting. I don't know.
So what do you go with? Scale of 1 to 10?
I'm going to give this episode a 9.7.
Wow. So we got a 9.5, 9.5, 9.7, and 9.0 from the four of us. Excellent.
It's pretty good.
All right, guys. Well, that wraps up our show for tonight. I want to say thank you so much to Ray in the Bronx for giving us a call and checking in with us. And I want to say happy anniversary to Ray and his wife. So thank you for calling, Ray. And we missed Paul tonight, but we'll give him a little bit of a shout out as well. And I want to let you guys know that Monday, same bat time, same bat channel, we're going to have Philo Barnhart on, and he was one of the original animators on Star Trek, the motion picture. He drew V'ger and the Klingon photon torpedoes in the opening sequence of the movie. And he got to see it on the big screen in full HD, 4K restoration for the director's edition. And he's going to come on and talk with us a little bit about what it was like seeing his work redone and what he thought about their version of the film after working on the original film. So that's pretty cool. That'll be Monday at 7:30 p.m. right here. I want to take this opportunity to say that our fan score was 9.1 and our score from all of us was 9.4. So we liked the episode just a little bit better than our fans. So that's pretty cool. We didn't have Paul's score, but that's pretty cool. And I want to also let you guys know how much we appreciate each and every single one of you guys. And make sure you head over to our Facebook page, Trek Talkin' and Beyond, and let us know where you're listening from so we can give you a future fan shout out. So I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim, and I want to say thank you to our very own David for hanging out and Trek Talking with us tonight. Thank you, David.
Yeah, it's been fun. Thanks for having me.
And I want to say thank you to our very own Eric for hanging out and Trek Talking with us. Thank you, Eric.
You better believe it. Amazing time as always, guys.
And thank you so much to Charles for hanging out and Trek Talking with us. Thank you, Charles.
Oh, always, always fun.
And I want to let you guys know that yours truly, Uncle Jim, is going to be at Super Mega Fest this weekend in Wilmingham, Massachusetts. We'll be there, so give a look. You can't miss me, and maybe I'll let you touch my bat lift. Who knows? If you run into me, ask me. I'll let you touch it. Anyways, I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim, saying thank you for listening. Trek fans are the best fans. You better believe that. Please, everybody, be good to each other and stay safe. Hailing frequencies are closed. Good night, everybody.
Night, y'all.
Good morning, Pastor.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.